Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. We are privileged today to continue with our conversations with remarkable minds. A special Earth Day. Dr. Vandana Shiva, an internationally renowned environmental and social activist, and formerly one of India's top nuclear physicists, she's regarded as the leading pioneer behind India's ecological and ecofeminism movement. In 1982, Dr. Shiva founded the Research Foundation for Science, Technology, and Ecology, which led to the creation of her Navdanya, an organization dedicated to the restoration of organic farming across India and the preservation of indigenous knowledge and culture. Now, for several years, Vandana has fought for changes in the practice of agriculture and food security. She's traveled the world speaking against biopiracy, globalization, and patenting of indigenous knowledge by large agricultural companies and pharmaceutical corporations. Her activist efforts have created grassroots organizations throughout the developing world to counter genetic engineering of crops as well as empower women. She received numerous international awards, including the Alternative Nobel Prize, the Right Livelihood Award, and UNEP's Global 500 Award, and the UN's Earth Day International Award. Her websites are vandanashiva.com and navdanya.org. Nice to have you with us today.
Good to be back.
Now, we're delighted to have you back to remind people on this day that the Earth is the only home we have for ourselves, our children, and our children's future. And so far, we've been trashing our home without mercy. There is the degradation and wastage of water that all life depends upon. Toxins are rampant in our lakes and rivers and aquifers and oceans. And deforestation continues at a rapid pace. And the earth and oceans are ravished with non-biodegradable waste and garbage that is killing off wildlife. Erosion and soil degradation through industrial agricultural methods is forcing a tipping point in future food security. Our insatiable thirst for energy continues to rely on predominantly on hydrocarbon fuel sources, oil, natural gas, and coal. In fact, we're emitting more greenhouse gases than ever before. So climate change and global warming are the greatest threats of our time. And biodiversity continues to decline as more and more species go extinct. And so it goes. Now, the UN has declared that this year will be the International Year of the Soil. And if we look back at past civilizations, the misuse of soil was a major factor in their decline. And cases such as Carthage in North Africa and the Mayan civilization in Central America, agricultural abuse was a key factor in those cultural collapses. And we are repeating those same mistakes now with widespread pseudoscience and modern technology that relies upon chemical fertilizers and pesticides and GMOs. And aside from viewing Earth Day as honoring the Gaian principle of the planet as a holistic entity with its own organs, each interdependent upon the other to keep it healthy and alive, I'd like you to begin with the first word, earth, meaning soil and dirt. People can more easily connect with the threats to our air and temperature alterations due to climate change and air pollution or to water threats due to increasing water shortages. However, it is more difficult for people to value the health of soil in the same light. So please begin by putting soil and dirt into its proper perspective and what is happening to the quality and health of the soil today in the industrial model and what are the long-term threats to human life if it continues. And the second, put this into the context of how the capitalist model further alienates populations from the earth and from dirt and soil and from the natural elements necessary for us to live. The forum is yours.
Well, very, very happy Earth Day to all. And it is a good moment to recognize that it is the soil that sustains us. The word for soil and earth in Latin is humus. the word human, humanness, is derived from that. We were so deeply aware that we are children of the soil. If the soils are fertile, we have an existence and a future. And as one of the most ancient Vedas says, in this little handful of soil lies the future of humanity. If you take care of it, it will take care of you. If you destroy it, it will destroy you. And that, as you mentioned, Gary, is the history of civilizations that went, but also the history of civilizations that sustained themselves. And I'm so proud of the fact that India has been a civilization in continuity because we centered our life on soil. We get up in the morning and we have to put our foot down and we say to the earth and the soil, so sorry that I have to walk on you, but I promise I will not have a heavy footprint. We have to dig a little bit to sow our seeds. We again apologize to the earth and say, I know I'm hurting you, but I will not hurt you too much. I will take care that my plow doesn't go deep into your vitals and I don't hurt you. And I also promise that whatever I receive from you, I will give back with love and gratitude. And that law of return is the secret of a sustainable relationship with the soil. However, with industrial agriculture, we were made to believe that we can get rid of soil, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, minerals from chemical factories, leftovers of the war, nitrogen fertilizers from factories that made explosives was the basis of agriculture, and the soil was merely an empty container to hold these manufactured chemical inputs. We even started to talk about soil as dirt and dirt as dirty, and all education has been to make children feel that touching the soil is somehow a dirty job. That's what's made us look down on our fellow farmers. That's what's made us look down on an agrarian culture. We have to not miss this opportunity of 2015 being the year of soil to rediscover ourselves as children of the soil, to recognize that when we put our hands back into the soil, we are becoming one with our mother, and that that work with the soil is the highest work we can do, because in that work, not only are we finding our real identity, we are producing good food. When everything else is over, the soil, the seed, and the garden is there for you, and the city of Detroit, which has been abandoned by industry and abandoned by governments, it's the gardens that people are building in the middle of the ruins. In Syria, as the bombing takes place, our network on Seed Freedom has managed to get seeds into the towns and villages, and the gardening movement is spreading like wildfire. Because when you have no food, you appreciate working with the soil and with the dirt and having a bit of seed which can multiply and you can share and you can spread it. But there is very big reason why we need to turn to the soil in this period of climate change. We focused a lot on fossil fuels for climate change, but the biggest contribution to climate instability, to greenhouse gas emissions, which are carbon dioxide, nitrogen oxide, and methane, together the biggest share is coming from an industrial model of agriculture. Nitrogen oxides are 300 times more destabilizing for the climate than carbon dioxide. And an industrial agriculture is a fossil fuel-based agriculture, whether it is in the production of the fertilizers or in the use of heavy machinery to displace people and count it falsely as efficiency. When you only count labor input and not energy input, then using 500 times more energy is made to look like it's efficient, whereas in industrial agriculture, you use 100 times more energy to produce a unit of food. In ecological farming, we use one unit of energy and we can produce 10 units of food. That's because we work in the law of return. And with the law of return, when you give back the soil to the carbon, we are not only getting rid of the emissions that come from industrial farming, we are taking out the excess carbon dioxide through photosynthesis, putting it back in the soil. And our work in India, the work of Rodial Institute, the work of FIBL, it's all accumulating to show that if we increase organic matter by 2 tons per hectare, which is totally possible with good organic farming practices, we can actually meet what is called the emissions gap, reduce emissions enough in order to stabilize the temperature to 2 degrees centigrade. So the secret to solve the problem of climate change is to take care of the soil. That's why I wrote Soil Not Oil. And I do really feel that every one of us can become an agent of positive change by linking back to the soil, having a little garden, having a little pot in your windowsill, supporting organic farmers, becoming part of an organic community. But in any case, we've got to address climate change. We've got to address the food crisis. You more than anyone else has told the world what a disaster the food system has become with chemicals, poisons, GMOs. I've just had a debate. You know, the White House is giving an award to this fictitious golden rice, which they've been trying to develop for since 1985. As a cure to vitamin A deficiency, and we have existing solutions. You could give supplements. More importantly, you can grow vitamin A-rich crops. They haven't managed to develop it. Even now, it's in a development stage. ERIE says we are not ready, and yet they're awarding themselves because it's like the emperor has no clothes. Now, industrial farming was an emperor without clothes because it believed chemicals and fossil fuels will feed us, and GMOs are an emperor without clothes because they really believe corporate monopoly to produce non-food will feed us. So rediscovering the soil is rediscovering our food, it's rediscovering ourselves, and in the process, getting the power to make a shift. Because when we get back into the soil, we realize power comes from the ground up.
I appreciate that insight. Thank you. As a follow-up, I view Earth Day as an occasion for people to seriously reflect and remind themselves that we must become more grounded. We must learn to become more conscious that we're rooted in the Earth and deeply remember that our bodies are the transformation of biomolecules from dirt. Would you elaborate upon this image further, and how can we rediscover and take ownership and responsibility for this relationship we have with the planet and its elements more proactively?
You know, I think Mother Earth Day is not something about something out there. That's why I'm so glad the United Nations decided to add Mother Earth Day to Earth Day, because A, it reminds us she's Gaia and living and self-organized, but it also reminds us she gives, we receive. And we give back a little bit in Thanksgiving. It's when we give back to the soil through organic matter, we get the nutrients that are then in the soil, then in the plants, and then in our bodies. Why do we have such a severe nutrient deficiency, trace elements, minerals, the rich and the poor? Because what we are producing as food is nutritionally empty. Nutritionally empty because we decided we could trash the earth and empty the soil of its nutrients. So the figures are there, up to 30% decline in nutrients in England, in the United States, in vegetables in the last 30, 40 years of industrial agriculture. On the other hand, ecological farming with biodiversity makes our health beginning with the soil. As Albert Howard, who came to India, decided to turn the Indian peasant into his professor, wrote the book Agricultural Testament, he's written, health is one grand continuum from the soil to the plants to the humans. So if our soils are not healthy, our plants won't be healthy, and we as human beings will pretend we are getting food, but we will not be getting nourishment. And all of these false offerings of a golden rice for vitamin A, a GMO banana for iron or vitamin A, all of them are so ineffective in providing the balanced nutrition we need, and the only source of health is the soil. But a soil respected, a soil to which we give back, a soil that we recognize is full of life, billions of organisms who are making soil fertility for us. They are part of our extended family. It's when the consciousness in our minds recognizes that this living earth includes those tiny microorganisms in the soil who are our members of the family, and we learn to take care of them, we will take care of our health as a byproduct.
Roundup, which is the most commonly used pesticide in the world, is known to be an endocrine disruptor in human cells at levels allowed in drinking water. And yet at the same time that we're having dozens of scientific studies prove its dangers to infants, to pregnant women, developing fetuses, we are encouraging people to use more of it. Our government at the USDA and the, by extension, the UN and its various programs are suggesting people use more of this Roundup and not being honest about its devastating effects. Explain the problems when we do not have biodiversity in our culture. Instead, we have monocrops, a single crop, whether it's cotton in India or soybeans or corn in the United States, and what that does to the soil, what it does to our health, and how we can become far better able to feed all people on the planet if we simply return to more natural, organic, and sustainable methods.
The Roundup issue, I mean, the name tells you all. It's meant to round up all life and all biodiversity. That's what it's designed to do, kill life forms, kill the greens. And Monsanto lied by saying it doesn't affect humans because we don't have what is called the shikimate pathway, the metabolic process through which bacteria in our gut produce the enzymes, which then also relate to the neurotransmitters that make our brains function. Our cells might not have that pathway, but the bacteria in our gut do. And Roundup is not just creating a war on plants and biodiversity, the milkweed that sustains the monarch butterfly, on the biodiversity in the soil, which is why pathogens are growing, but it's also affecting the biodiversity in our gut, which is why pathogenic bacteria are going, and all of the new disease epidemics of the U.S. The graphs are there to show you how there's an explosion. Any responsible government would say, we're going to look into this. We're going to look at what are the multiple processes through which our children are being robbed of their health. Now, in India, the BT cotton has destroyed soil organisms. I have a doctorate working with me just now, and she's found not a single pollinator on a BT cotton plant. On the other hand, in the biodiversity farm of Navdani, and we now offer a one-month course on the A to Z of agroecology to learn about living seeds and living soils and living ecosystems and living food, we've got six times more pollinators just by allowing the biodiversity to flourish. Biodiversity is the way to regulate pests. Spraying pesticides create pests. Making pesticide-producing plants like GMOs, the BT GMOs, create super pests. Biodiversity regulates weeds. Cover crops make sure there are no weeds. Monocultures create pests and create weeds. GMO monocultures, like the Roundup-resistant soy and corn, has led to an epidemic of super weeds emerging in the U.S. so that half the farms are overtaken by weeds that can't be controlled, and now they're talking of bringing crops resistant to 2,4-D, an ingredient of Agent Orange. This model of agriculture began as war. It is now making itself so obviously a war mechanism on our farms and in our foods and against our bodies. The way we can reclaim our health is by making peace with the earth. Making peace with the earth means making peace with all her diversity, all her species. And when we work with diversity of species, as our studies at Navdanya have shown, in health per acre, we measure nutrition per acre. And we can feed to India's, globally we can feed to planets. This 9 billion figure that the industry keeps throwing at us is a totally fake figure. The potential of biodiversity to feed double the population without expanding the acreage under agriculture, that's established in every UN study. But not only is biodiversity an answer to hunger and malnutrition, it's an answer to poverty. The farmers who work with us with their own seeds, doing agroecology and organic farming, and practicing fair trade and shaping markets that don't exploit them are earning 10 times more than those who chase the BT cotton or the Pepsi potato for the chips or any of the seeds that fit into a corporate monopoly system. And most importantly, biodiversity is what nourishes the earth. Biodiversity in the soil is soil health. Biodiversity of pollinators is one-third of our food system. Biodiversity of plants is the secret to nutrition. Biodiversity is not just life. Biodiversity is our real security, because I'm going to be releasing a manifesto for the Year of Soil at the Expo in Milan, which is on 2nd of May 2015. And this manifesto is on soil and land. It was drafted by an international team, including the former Director General of the Desertification Convention of the United Nations. And what we are finding is where the earth and soil has been abused, that is where people have been displaced at very large level. That is why conflicts are emerging. That's the story of Syria. That's the story of Nigeria and Boko Haram. All of these conflicts begin as conflicts through displacement. They are then mutated into issues of religion. But the real story is the story of how violence against the earth is turning back on humanity and leading to wars between human beings.
Vandana, I recall you wrote an article earlier this year when you identified a global war that is underway at this moment. That is a war between the art of money-making and the art of living. Now, for most Americans, in any case, they would not see a difference between the two. The global elite live to make money, and if people don't live by that principle, then they're regarded as useless and extinguishable. Now, this is the message from the Koch brothers and the lunatic fringe of the American political parties and the religious parties, and the captains of free market capitalism. They all promote it. Now, callous disregard for the poor and poor health, poverty, early deaths is only collateral damage for increasing free market and creating higher profits from global finance. So no different in principle than dropping depleted uranium warheads across the Middle East. Simply the collateral damage of war and doing business. They don't take it personally, though they never look at the outcome of how they made their money. So explain this derangement and its consequences when making money becomes no different than taking a life. And in the context of being rooted in the earth, honoring and respecting the earth as the mother of our subsistence, what is an authentic art of living humans should be pursuing right now, and especially since climate change is worsening and threatening humanity's very existence?
Yes, the art of money-making is based on two illusions. The first illusion is that in extracting and robbing the earth and robbing people of the wealth they have created and to which they have a share, the illusion that the robbers are the creators. That is the foundation of everything in biopiracy that I have worked on. But it is also the foundation of mining fossil fuels, the tar sands, mining the fertility of the soil to create degraded and desertified soils. This is not creating wealth. This is creating death and destruction. On the other hand, the art of living is first and foremost to be fully aware of the continuum of life. Second, to be aware of your duties to all other life. The separation, first the separation, our separation from the earth, through all the models of thought, the Cartesian, Newtonian models, through an economy that misplaces productivity and creation in the hands of robbers. That has created a separation between us and the earth. But it's also created a huge separation between actions and responsibilities for the consequences of those actions, as you mentioned. And so we have a hugely irresponsible set of actions, whether it be in playing with other people's money in the financial casino or playing with the climate and allowing devastation to take place worldwide, or playing with democracy, using money to steal democracy, because after all, in the art of living is the art of being free, is the art of democracy. So an assault on the art of living is an assault on the freedom of life, of all life forms, as well as human beings in their diverse societies, who have shaped institutions, structures, and processes so that the last person can have a say and can have a voice to the gifts of society and the gifts of the future. The clash between these two models, one exploitative, extractive, linear, non-renewable, devastating, ecocidal, genocidal, and on the other, light-footed, grateful, returning constantly, returning to the soil, returning to society. I eat food. Do I give a fair share back to the farmer? Why is it that farmers are being wiped out everywhere? Because the system is designed to exploit them and to exploit the soil. A law of return in society would mean a just economy and not the 1% controlling the wealth of 99%, which is the Koch brother model, which is also the data already out there that we have reached levels of inequality that are now totally non-sustainable. And finally, this is related to distribution of power. If you all you do is use money to extract political power, to then change the laws and the policies and the rules, and in every society we are having this debate, then democracy dies. And the law of return in democracy is to constantly return to the people, to return to the ground, to check out and say, what is the will of the people? So we are at a very fragile threshold of our evolution. We will either be able to correct all these illusions that have been manufactured to keep the powerful in power, or we can come back to reality, take instruction from the earth to make peace with the earth and create peace in society and prosperity for all. That shared prosperity is a total possibility through sharing the gifts of the earth and living in an ecological way.
Well, we thank you very much for being with us, and all the best, and we appreciate your insights on Earth Day.
And my greetings again to everyone for Earth Day.
Thank you, Vandana. From New Delhi, India, that was Vandana Shiva, and her latest book is Making Peace with the Earth. Her website is vandanashiva.com or navandana.org. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment for the next part of our program. Please stay with us. To welcome all of you, I'm Gary Noll, and this is a continuation of our Earth Day special, Conversations with Remarkable Minds. We were just in New Delhi, India. Now we're going to the United Kingdom. We're standing by is Satish Kumar, one of the few people in the world who fully embraces the principles Mahatma Gandhi to promote a spirituality opposed to war and ecological destruction. At the age of 9, he renounced the world to become a wandering Jain monk. But dissuaded by his inner voice, at 18, he left his ascetic life to embrace Gandhi's vision of land reform and global peace. Having been influenced by Bertrand Russell's anti-nuclear war philosophy, he undertook an 8,000-mile pilgrimage, having walked penniless from India to the Soviet Union, France, and traveled to the United Kingdom and America. And he delivered his packets of peace tea to the heads of governments of each of these four nuclear powers. And having settled in the United Kingdom in 1973, he's now the editor of the prestigious magazine Resurgence, which highlights many of our world's greatest thinkers and visionaries on environmental, ecological, and sustainable issues. He has founded schools and colleges that introduce ecological sanity and spiritual values into their curricula. He's been a hero for many of our progressive leaders and received 2 honorary doctor degrees from prominent British universities. Among his books are Soil, Soul, and Society, as well as No Destination, which is an extraordinary autobiography of his remarkable life and philosophy. His website is resurgence.org. Nice to have you with us today.
Pleasure to be with you.
One realization more and more people are awakening up to is evidence that the free market capitalism engine, which drives all the developing countries of Western civilization, is no longer viable for sustaining life on Earth. Over and over again, large international conferences are held with representatives from world governments and convened to address the challenges and dangers from climate change and global warming. And over again, we witness stalemate and aborted efforts because the corporations and banks and their influence over government policies are so powerful. You may know Jerry Mander at the International Forum for Globalization. And when he came on this program, he said that our current economic model is fundamentally amoral. Ethics have no role in it. It is only about revenue and greater material rewards. And to keep the system constantly progressing, regardless of the damages to Earth and the quality of human life and health it leaves in its wake. Is there an economic alternative to the amoral capitalist model that we need to start entertaining today if we have any hope of reducing the free market's casualties and the ecological and human devastation it's causing? The forum is yours.
Yes, there is alternative. And the alternative is to shift from globalization to localization and shift from growth, which is more economic growth, to growth in well-being, because globalization causes global warming and climate change. Globalization means transportation of goods from one country to another country, long distances. So goods made in China are distributed in the United States or Canada or Europe, and goods made in Europe are distributed in China or India or South America or Africa. That means huge amount of transportation required, and that transportation is based in fossil fuel. We need more and more petroleum, and use of unlimited amount of fossil fuel forever and ever in the name of globalization and free trade creates greenhouse gases, and that causes global warming and climate change. So the alternative is to have global mind, global vision, global values of compassion, and global values of sharing and caring and equality, and maybe global understanding. So global mind, think globally, but act locally, which means that your economy largely should be local. So they need less transportation, less fossil fuel, less CO2 emission, and less greenhouse gases and less climate change. So the alternative is to shift our focus from globalization to localization and from economic growth to growth in well-being. That's the alternative.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Would you put the myth of endless economic and technological progress into perspective and also share with us your predictions of where free-reign capitalism and technology is leading us unless we put it into some semblance of balance and sanity?
This technology is leading us to a robotic society. At the moment, we are witnessing increasing number of robotic actions. Robots are milking the cows instead of people milking the cows. Robots are driving the tractors and combined harvesters on the farms instead of people farming. Robots are even being introduced in the restaurants where they can wait on people rather than human beings offering a kind of sharing and caring service. So these technological inventions are leading us towards a robotic society, which I would call a sort of inhuman society. Human beings are considered to be superfluous or unnecessary or too expensive and to employ, and therefore let us get everything made by robots. What will humans do? We don't know. So our technological and an industrial system is leading us more and more towards a robotic society, and nanotechnology is leading us towards more surveillance, and we don't know what human values are anymore in this rush for increasing technological and automation. And so I believe that we need to go back to our human sharing and caring, and people working together on farms, in factories, in offices, in restaurants, in every place. We need human beings working together, because human beings, when they work together, they are sharing, caring. There is a kind of psychological fulfillment and satisfaction of good work. When people are left alone, they will suffer from depression, from loneliness, from isolation, from physical diseases like cancer and heart attack and psychological diseases like depression and loneliness and isolation. Therefore, alternative is to know that technology has a place, but put technology in its place and not allow to dominate all our activities, and all our lives.
During a memorial lecture you gave at Wimbledon, you stated the following. For many environmentalists, global warming has become the new hell that is brandished to terrify people into action.
Yeah.
But if we are to make the changes that are needed to bring our relationship with the planet back into balance, then a new relationship with nature is required.
Yeah.
One founded on the power of love rather than the power of force. That's what you said. Now, why is focusing on the fear aspect of a pending environmental catastrophe less constructive, that even though it's realistic, than to reorient our consciousness and focus our attention on the kind of relationship we have with the earth and based upon love?
Yeah. Now, the earth is a beautiful place. We are grateful to have such a beautiful planet Earth, which has wonderful flowers, wonderful fragrance, wonderful food, wonderful climate, beautiful forests. So we need to develop a sense of gratitude, and we need to develop a sense of love of nature and love of planet Earth rather than fear of doom and gloom and disaster. That's what I said in my lecture. I believe that at the moment, global warming, climate change, doom, gloom, and disaster, that is dominating our thinking. And if you act out of fear, you will not act in a right way. In order to act the right way, you need to act out of love of nature, love of the planet Earth.
celebration of the beauty and abundance of the planet Earth and all the natural resources. Natural resources are not only resources for the economy, but natural resources are the true source of life. So if we appreciate with gratitude and love, then I think we will take care of our planet Earth and our land and our forests and our rivers and our mountains and our rainforests in particular and our animals and our people. So that caring and sharing, love and compassion and generosity of spirit and love of nature, these are greater values than fear. Fear of doom and gloom, fear of global warming, fear of climate change, fear of overpopulation, fear of resources running out, all this fear, out of fear, if we act, then it will not be a lasting solution. So global warming or no global warming, we have to live in harmony with the natural world.
I appreciate those insights. I would offer a little different perspective. Being an environmentalist my entire life, adult life, I see, unfortunately, people are very narrow in their perspectives.
Yes.
They don't see the consequences of their actions, and many times they don't care. When a person uses a plastic bottle, they assume that it'll be recycled, but it will not end up strangling a dolphin in the Pacific Ocean and be a plastic mass that stretches as far as the state of Texas in the Pacific Ocean. They don't see that.
Yeah.
They don't see that the water in California, that my audience out there has been listening to the show for over 33 years, they don't see that there's a finite amount. Because when they turned on the tap this morning and took their shower, there was no cutoff in saying you've had enough water. When they go to drink water, they have enough. When a hydrofracking company or an oil production company or a farmer wants water, it's there. So because we have not been faced with the consequences of exploitation of this, not since the Dust Bowls of the 1930s, have we paid attention to the environment as we should now, but we're not doing it. We're not paying attention. People are not moving out of the states that don't have water and won't have it in the future. People are not stopping farming in states that are running out of topsoil. People are not paying attention to how they're using fossil fuels. They just want what fossil fuel gives them. If it's a cell phone or a car, that's what they want. So to assume that we should be doing things from love is also to assume that we are love and love of a higher consciousness that stops for a moment and assumes that if I'm going to do something from love, the love must spread to the environment, to animals and other human beings. I don't believe that we're even capable at this moment of considering the concept of universal love. Your thoughts, please.
Yeah. No, the thing is that we have to think long term. A little bit of fear and avoiding disasters and avoiding big, dangerous climate change and this sort of thing. In a short term, we need to influence the government and we need to influence the business leaders. But in the long term, we need to change our educational system. And we need to understand that we are not the superior species from all other species. Human beings are not the rulers or the masters of nature. Human beings are part of nature. We are an integral part of natural world. And therefore, in our education, children should need to learn that. And in our universities, young students need to learn that we have to be part of nature because we are nature. We are not apart from nature. We are not separate from nature. At the moment, our educational system has educated and brainwashed everybody's mind, thinking that we are somehow superior and we can do to nature what we like. We are almost at war against nature. The way we are treating our land and poisoning it with chemicals and fertilizers and pesticides, and the way we are cutting down the rainforest, and the way we are poisoning our oceans and rivers, And the way we are putting animals in cruel conditions and factory farms, all that is like war against nature. So how did it start? Because in our educational system, we have been educated that human beings are somehow superior and at the top of the evolution. And all the natural world is there for the need and for the benefit of humans. So we can do what we like to nature as long as it benefits humans. This education, this brainwashing has been going on for last nearly 100, 150 years or 200 years. This has to change. And if we can start educating our young people to think that we are integral part of nature, we depend on nature. If there's no nature, there'll be no economy. There'll be no well-being. People will not be happy if the nature is destroyed. If that education is brought into our schools and universities, then in the long term, we can create a new future. But in the short term, of course, I agree with you that we need to influence our media to report all these things. We need to influence our business leaders to change their policies. And also, we need to influence the governments. And I'm glad that there will be a big, important conference in Paris at the end of this year. And at that time, the whole world and all the environmental movement, we must put pressure. We must put big pressure on governments of the world to change their policies and find a way of reducing our impact on the environment so that we don't face global warming and climate change. But that's a short term. The long term, we have to change our education and our way of thinking, our mindset, and our values.
You've been a vegetarian all your life. Many of our listeners right now are vegetarian or even vegans. Now, aside from the nonviolence to animals that's associated with vegetarianism, right now with our large industrial agriculture and corporate livestock factories, can you explain how adopting a vegetarian lifestyle serves as a political act of disobedience that is critical at this time? And then my concern for the adoption of a vegetarian lifestyle is a spiritual activity, a kind of new postmodern yoga capable of revealing ourselves, our inherent spiritual nature, and the responsibility to adapt practices and lifestyles that benefit the earth and others, rather than only indulging our own personal egotistic cravings and desires and greed.
Yes. The thing is, apart from the argument of reducing cruelty to animals and the argument of nonviolence, being a vegetarian is also an environmental and ecological imperative. Because in order to feed humans with animal protein, you need 5 to 10 acres per person. And if everybody, 7 billion people on this earth, people in China, India, Africa, South America, everywhere, if 7 billion people were to eat the diet of the people in the United States or Canada or Europe, of meat diet, we will need not one planet, but 3 planets. We haven't got 3 planets. We haven't got enough land to rear the animals, the pigs and the chickens and the cows and all the animals that we have to rear. We haven't got so much land. And therefore, if you were to feed human beings with vegetarian diet, largely vegetarian diet, then you need about 1 acre per person to feed vegetarian diet. If you want to feed meat diet, you need 5 to 10 acres, depending on what kind of animals you are rearing. So where will you get so much land? We have got increasing population and decreasing. The planet is limited. We cannot increase the land. So from the ecological and environmental perspective, being a vegetarian is the most sensible thing to do. Apart from that, also, I think we need, for the health point of view, there is a non-violence point of view, there is an environmental point of view, but there's also a health point of view. From the point of view of health, I think so much protein, body is incapable of digesting. And therefore, so much meat eating is causing lots of health problems. And therefore, if you want to be healthy, you need to have to simplify your diet. And largely a vegetarian, plant-based diet is much more healthy. Many scientific studies in the University of California and many other universities in the UK and Russia, many scientists have found this relationship between good health and vegetarian diet. So whether you take it non-violent point of view, whether you take it environmental point of view, and whether you take it health point of view, a vegetarian diet is a most sensible diet for the humankind.
There are two biological poles that people struggle with. One is towards validating and comforting personal needs, which I call the cult of individuality.
Yeah.
The other is our need for others, our connectedness with our community and environment upon which our lives depend.
Yeah.
Now, as long as the cult of personality reigns, climate change will be accelerating. More speeches will be given, and nothing will be done. Species will vanish, and the earth will become more uninhabitable. However, if our sense of community is only understood in the context of our relationship with other people, that alone is not a solution. The 1% of our community with a single goal is to squeeze the lifeblood from the planet for their own wealth. And different fundamentalist religions are a community as a political party. So unless our connection with our human beings is combined with a deep connection and communal relationship with the earth and all other species that share the earth with us, human community remains insufficient. What, therefore, is required for us to restore our sense of community with nature in order to strengthen our love and commitment to the well-being of our human community?
I totally agree with you. In the world today, the individualism has gone a bit too far, and we have lost a sense of community. We are not pure individuals. We are completely dependent on each other. We are dependent on the earth and the soil. We are dependent on the water, and we are dependent on air. And we are dependent on other people, our parents, our teachers, our colleagues, our friends. We are dependent on each other. We are all connected, interconnected, interdependent. We are all related. This interrelationship is the fundamental principle of life. And that has been forgotten in our modern Western individualistic world. And therefore, there is a strong ego ruling our societies. The egotistical worldview where I, my house, my car, my success, my money, my name, my fame, my wealth, everything is my, and I am important. This kind of egocentric worldview is causing damage. So we have to shift from egocentric worldview to ecocentric worldview. But the eco means relationship. Eco means home. Eco means planet Earth. Ecosphere, biosphere. We are all interdependent. This understanding, I would say that we need to bring this into our educational system. We need to bring these values of ecological relationship. We are all mutually interdependent, and we have to live in a world of reciprocity rather than individuality. These ideas have to be brought into our study in our schools and in our universities. There was a great writer called Prince Kropotkin. He wrote a book called Mutual Aid. That book needs to be read side by side, Darwin's book. Because Darwin believed in competition and natural selection, but the Prince Kropotkin believed in mutual aid and cooperation. So this kind of understanding needs to be brought in our schools and in our universities. So educational system is very important. This is why I established a small school in UK. And I also founded Schumacher College in the UK, because I believe that unless we can bring these values and these understanding in our educational system, we cannot solve the problems in the long term. So we need to work. I wrote a book called You Are, Therefore I Am. At the moment, our educational system and academic thinking is ruled by René Descartes' dictum, I think, therefore I am. So I think, therefore I am is a statement of individualism, statement of dualism, statement of separation and disconnection. And so the old paradigm is the paradigm of disconnection and separation. We are disconnected from nature and we are disconnected from each other. So new paradigm, the new story, if you like, the new story is story of relatedness and interconnectedness. If we can bring this new story and new paradigm, then I think we can address these issues more effectively.
I agree. Thank you very much, Satish Kumar, for being on and sharing your wonderful insights. I appreciate it.
You are welcome.
That completes our Conversations with Remarkable Minds Earth Day special. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening.